it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am joined today by fellow grandparent Mark Margopoulos and County Commissioner. And you know, when you're a county commissioner, you have these meetings and everybody's organized and polite and quiet, and they sit down and they wait their turn to speak, and they don't spit on you and all of these other things that the grandbabies do.
Although occasionally some of those meetings, something breaks out.
Yeah, I don't go to enough meetings. I guess I'm blocking out that part. This might be an awkward segue. I don't mean it that way, but when I think of when I think of people, you know, getting riled up at county commissioner meetings, you know, you guys had a little bit of controversy this last month with, so we had a couple of hurricanes just made their way through the area, which threw everything into chaos. I would say competitive with a good snowstorm or ice storm. Pretty impressive, the second storm.
More so, I would say.
Yeah. You know, I mean, at least at my house, we were totally ready for the bombardment of Hurricane Florence, which at my own house turned out to be not much of anything.
Right.
We are not prone to flooding issues, but you know, we kept power throughout, and we were very well prepared and very happy to just see all that stuff just sitting there waiting, unused. And then we were sort of getting full of ourselves, and then the second hurricane came through, and we were like, "Oh, it's probably going to be fine. Yeah, you know, we'll collect some water just in case because we're on well and septic, and you know, well, you know, it'll probably be nothing." Oh, there go the lights! Bang for 4 days.
Yeah, everybody got kind of caught with that psychological curveball.
Right,
there.
Exactly. Right.
So, you want to hear my idea for Eastgate, real quick?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Eastgate.
Okay. So,
a very difficult problem, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, we all saw the picture of the person paddleboarding across the Eastgate parking lot,
yes.
Right? So, for years, I've been contending that we need to do away with Eastgate, bring Booker Creek and Bowling Creek to the surface because they're pushed down below the surface. That's
right.
Part of the problem.
Okay.
Create a lake there, a public space with an outdoor amphitheater, have a park and an area where food trucks and some businesses can be located on the side, and save all the money that's going to cost us virtually every year when we have to deal with that issue down there. Stores have come and gone. They've gone because they got flooded.
Right.
Some have the wherewithal to stay, the insurance, the stick-to-itiveness.
Although after a while, it's hard to understand in some ways how they get insured after you've been flooded three times.
Yeah, I think the insurance companies are starting to wake up to climate change and those kind of things. But imagine that if we – so I'm really curious as to what the cumulative cost of these events down there have been over the years, and compare that to – because the first thing everybody thinks of when I say that is, you know, you're crazy. It costs too much money. We're going to lose all the business.
We're going to displace all those businesses. But what
did it cost us so far, and what will it cost us in the future? Because we're going to have more rain events, and Chapel Hill does not have a central public space.
And what would that do, by the way, environmentally to protect – the surrounding areas from flooding, if that water had a place to go collect, because you do a lot of mitigation in Eastgate to keep the water from accumulating there, that water must be backing up and staying somewhere else.
Well, what happens during the storm is it washes up onto the parking lots and the roads and over cars and into businesses and picks up all sorts of pollutants.
Right.
And then it subsides and flows on down to Jordan Lake where everybody
drinks
from.
So if you had a lake there, with, you know, the natural process of...
It'd be about as clean as it could get.
Yeah, that would make a big difference. Well, I think that's a fantastic idea. So all in favor, say aye. Aye. And it's done. So we decided that right here.
Yep,
That'll be just fantastic. Everybody start packing up the stores and moving. And you want to send your mail to Mark Markopoulos.
Yep. Whenever I bring that idea up, I have to follow it up with, I'm serious. And I am.
I really am. Yeah. Here's what I think we should do. And I really mean this.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's your new email address. Mark, I really mean this. at nokidding.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think I've been wondering that very same thing about Eastgate, to a lesser extent, about what happens here at University Place and what I call New Estes River over here that just persistently.
Yeah, I saw that on Monday morning after Florence.
Yeah, I mean, that was just an amazing sight to see. And here at the station, the water was just literally lapping right up at the sidewalk right outside the radio station. I've never seen that before. I mean, I've lived here a long time, but I've never seen that before.
Yep.
So, you know, that thing about water is it has this undeniable quality to it. Yep. It you know, they say water will find its own level. And I guess that means its own level. And if it needs to take your car and carry it somewhere else to go get its level, it's going to have that. So.
In the construction business, we call water the great destroyer.
Yeah. You know, really?
Can do a lot of damage.
Is that what you call it?
That's what I call it.
that's his suitable for radio broadcast version of what you call it. I know that's what you call it. Yeah, something like that. I mean, that really was an impressive thing. It did a lot of damage and disruption of the, you know, the thing about late September and October is that all these events are planned in the area. And of course, all of those schedules got disrupted. And that meant that Hog Day in Hillsboro got pushed down to October because of Florence. And it got pushed back to this weekend in October that it turned out going to be the weekend. Do I have this wrong?
It's this coming weekend, November 2nd and 3rd. Is that, or there's the date?
Well, the original weekend was in September,
I think it might have been in September, but then they chose another weekend, and it was the final day of early voting.
Right. It was November 3rd, that Saturday. Right. Yeah. I was thinking that they had pushed it back twice, but it's only once. Once was enough.
Yeah.
And the organizers had to make a difficult call, which is to decide to step back and just not do the event at all, which of course is very difficult for everybody who works so hard to make these things happen. But that's a decision that they made, not that the commissioners made. Is that right?
Right. And they never communicated with us in any formal fashion.
In between?
Right. They just picked a weekend. I mean, I guess they talked to Hillsboro because they're using the space down by the river. And so they just
not
made it,
thinking about
they
the
made
Board
their
of
own
elections.
Decision. This is when they're going to do it. And then they came to us finally.
and this was an event that was expected to start on a Friday and go through the weekend, or was it going to be Friday and Saturday?
Friday and Saturday, 2-day event. So typically on Hog Day, they have a concert on the Friday evening.
Right.
And then the hog cookers stay up all night.
Yeah.
Once
Bless
in a while
their hearts.
Cooking hogs. And they make the barbecue.
Yeah.
Then the next day is the festival. Selling the barbecue, eating the cotton candy, watching the Elvis impersonator.
The tribute to the hog.
It's great. I mean, I've been there a bunch of times. It's fun.
It's the greatest thing. You know, these people who stay up all night cooking a pig, I don't know how they do it, but I'm glad they do. It's just one of the great, great things.
Yeah. I know it gets it through the night. I've walked down through there.
You got an idea. And it's not a rock and roll song. Whatever gets you through the night. Yeah. It's not John Lennon doing that, you think?
Nope.
You think it's something else? Okay. Well, we won't get into that. We're just glad that they do what they do. I'm sure a lot of money is raised for various causes, too, associated with Hog Day. It's too bad that this happened. I think I mentioned to Penny Rich a couple weeks ago about this, that it would be my hope that they would consider moving the event to the spring instead of the fall. There's so many events going on in the fall.
They're going to do some sort of event in the spring, they said, to kind of make up for it. But they came to us, and they had already heard from us that we had a lot of concern. Citizens had a lot of concern.
Right.
Came to us as well about the last day of early voting, which is always the busiest day of early voting.
Right.
And
it's also the last day to register,
it's a really good point. If during early voting, you can go, and if there's any problems with your voting status, you can fix it. You can register if you're not registered. So it's a highly important voting period. Right. So we had, you know, it's a tough decision. You know, you're going to disappoint a bunch of people.
Right.
But we had to come down on the side of protecting people's right to vote.
Right.
Especially, we would do it any year, but this year,
oh man,
so important, you know.
It really is.
that we do everything we can to preserve what democracy has been left for us.
Right.
So, you know, they were very disappointed, and I don't know why they couldn't change it to another weekend. We asked them, and they gave us answers that, quite frankly, I didn't really feel were very powerful.
It seemed like they added up.
But they were, you know, quite happy to beat us over the head about it for a while. But we did the right thing. I mean,
I think you did. I just, you know, in the long run, when it comes down to making a choice between protecting people's access to voting, and as you say, especially because it's also the last day of registering, but, you know, there's a lot of concern about what will actually happen on Election Day. Mm-hmm. We want to encourage people to get out and vote early if they possibly can, just to ensure that they have access.
So I'll say this. They did, as part of their plan that they came back to us with, they were going to have people guiding people to early voting, and they were going to set up barricades. So they made some, they put some thought into how they
right.
might coexist with the voting day. But it was very clear that there were going to be less people voting. No doubt about it.
Just because of the capacity to have people in that area.
Right. You're going to drive downtown, and Churton Street's going to be totally jammed. They're going to say, go, you know, you can't go down this, down Margaret Street. You got to go up there and go around the block twice and come back in this way. And somebody will. And the parking was going to be a big issue down at the Board of Elections where the early voting is. So there was just no way it wasn't going to dampen.
Yeah, I mean,
voting,
and even if it's only for that one location, for a lot of people, you know, the Board of Elections is where they want to go. And it's just too important. You know, you just don't know. You don't want to find out that, there were, you know, 200 more votes in that one area.
Yep.
And those crazy amendments would have been defeated, you know.
So ours was a vote to protect people's right to vote.
Yeah.
It wasn't a vote to kill Hog Day, as some people have said. You know, we would have loved to have helped them do it on another weekend.
Yeah.
Or switch from Friday and Saturday to Saturday and Sunday, which would have worked.
Yeah.
Don't know why specifically they did not want to do that. But we just, bottom line, we were protecting the rights of the citizens to exercise our right to vote. And I'm proud that we did that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, too. And you know, the great thing is, if people want to express their feelings about that, they can come to a county commissioner's meeting and tell you how they feel about it, because they still have that right to express their opinions. And that's all because you're elected officials and the right to vote is protected. So see how that works.
Yep.
See what I did there? I just brought that all the way around. And we're gonna continue on talking about voting, because, you know, it's from now until Election Day. That's basically the only topic I have at all in my brain. So we're going to talk some more about that with Mark Margopoulos. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back with Mark Margopoulos, and we're talking about voting. And we're talking about, so I said there's only one thing to do about voting, and that's vote. Mark said,
vote and sue.
Vote
because
and
of
sue.
Gerrymandering and voter suppression in all its forms, right? That's a huge factor in this election.
Yeah.
The Brennan Institute for Justice, which specializes in these issues, recently put out a report. Now, granted, this is nationwide.
Right.
They were trying to figure out, like, what percentage of the vote do Democrats need to get a virtual tie?
Right.
61%. Right?
Right.
That gets a 50-50 split once you take the gerrymandering and voter suppression out of it. That's how bad it is, right? And it's never been done nationally.
And you know, people want to know, if the Democrats are going to have such a wave, then why are so many races so close? And gerrymandering is the answer. That's
the
reason.
And, you know, the amount of, I mean, North Carolina is one of a handful of states that's been aggressively scrubbing the voter rolls, right? I mean, it's terrible.
All along. They've been doing it all along.
Just steadily, right?
You know,
we've heard about Kemp, the Secretary of State in Georgia. This is unbelievable, right? He's running for governor, and he's in charge of the elections. I mean, our society insane?
And
right?
refused. You know? He was asked about this in his debate with Stacey Abrams, and he refused to say that he would recuse himself if there had to be a recount. If the election was so close that the Secretary of State's office had to order a recount, and you know who would supervise it, and they asked him the question, kind of a pro forma question, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're the Secretary of State, but you're also a candidate in that race, so you can see the reporter probably nodding yes, you know, like yes, you dummy, that's the answer. Mm-hmm. You'd recuse yourself, of course. Oh no, he says, I'm elected Secretary of State, and I'm going to do my job, and well. How selfless of him.
Yeah, they have no scruples whatsoever.
It's unbelievable.
So that 11% difference, the 61-39, like I said, that's a national number. It's going to vary from state to state.
It's probably worse in some states.
Well, it's better in others, right?
Sure.
So there's, you know, that doesn't signify a total lack of hope across the country. There are going to be places where that number is different, but it does show that we have let our democracy deteriorate to the point where we're in dangerous territory.
You know, I was listening to an interview. It just rings in my head more and more lately, but I was listening to an interview with our good friend Ellie Kinnaird on this radio station in 2010, after the elections in 2010. And she said, at the time, she said, you know, we have got to come to a place in our state and in the country where we understand that this reapportionment thing after the census that results in gerrymandered districts, we've got to stop that. We've got to come up with an accepted nonpartisan commission in each state that handles, and some states already do this. I think I'm right that California does this, which might be one of the reasons that California is so reliably progressive, because that's how people really are in the United States.
Yeah.
But she said, you know, we have got to, you know, what happens is the Democrats get in power and they gerrymander. And then if the Republicans get in power, which hasn't happened in North Carolina in a long time until recent years, and then when they do, then they gerrymander for themselves. And in that case, they were going to gerrymander because they had been out of power for a really, really long time.
And that's what they say every time they do something new to suppress the vote. They say, well, it's our turn. Y'all did it to us.
Right.
So that's all well and good, but now it's time to call it even.
And exactly.
And
that's exactly what she said. And
she
said, you know, what needs to happen is that when the pendulum will swing back.
Yep.
It feels far away now, which she's right, it did. That was 2010.
Mm-hmm.
When the pendulum swings back and when we get this power back, it's really important that we give it up and that we put it into a nonpartisan, fair process, because otherwise, you know, you really endanger the larger democratic process overall. And I don't think that people have realized until recently how dangerous that can be. It's just straight up dangerous.
So the outcome of this election across the country is going to be that in some states that's going to happen, and in some states it could get worse. Republicans who gerrymandered and voter suppressed are going to continue to do that because they're going to win because of that cheating.
Right.
Right. So we're going to have a mixed bag no matter how we look at it, but we just have to gain a little bit. You know, like just gain the veto override power in our state house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge,
it's enormous,
defensive, powerful move.
Right.
When you can do that, right?
Yeah.
When they can't just roll everything right over Governor Cooper.
I mean, it's
I'll sleep a lot better.
He must be one of the most frustrated governors in the country, Roy Cooper.
Well, yeah, I mean, he knew what he was getting into.
Right.
So. You know,
I think he's
strong.
He's turned out to be a bit tougher than maybe folks thought he was.
Yeah.
And he's a quiet, hardworking guy.
So my hope is that Democrats who are in higher positions around the country get a little tougher when these election results come in and we can see the cheating.
Right.
Right.
You got to call it out.
They're going to have to go for it and sue and just raise hell about it, right?
And not concede right away.
Yeah, right. They got to, not like when Gore in Florida, I mean, that was pathetic, right? You know, they need this is the time to stand up and fight against this stuff, even if you go down, right? So
I don't know if you've read Bob Woodward's book. I'm reading it now. I can't read more than a chapter at a time.
Yeah.
It just makes you want to tear your hair out.
Yep.
But the thing that I read that surprised me in a way and disappointed me in retrospect tremendously was that Obama called Hillary Clinton on election night and said, you know, you have to concede right away. It's going to be because Trump had made so much noise about not accepting the outcome of the election that he was calling it a rigged process and he wasn't going to accept that it was legitimate if he lost. And you know, he said, you know, it's for the best for the better of the country. It's very, very important that you concede promptly and that you're gracious about it because that kind of challenge has to be something that's only on him, that we're not part of that. And now, in retrospect, knowing what we know, and I honestly believe that Obama knew a lot about this, about the Russian interference. I've said this before on the radio, that I believe history is going to tell us that the Russians, in fact, changed votes and swiped that election.
So did the Republicans with voting machines, just like the Democrats have done in the past. But you know, the fact that Wisconsin and Michigan, we were talking about hundreds of thousands of votes that were the difference.
It just wasn't enough.
70,000 here and 60,000 there, just so close, right?
Right. And I really wish that they had not been so quick to hand that over.
They should have gone right into Wisconsin and Michigan and said, hold the phone.
Just stop everything.
Investigate this election.
I don't want to see this certified. We just want to have, we just want to make sure. That's all. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean – that's not on its face an accusation of cheating. It's a suggestion that there's a lot at stake and we need to make sure it's right.
Yep.
That's all. And, you know, if they had done such an investigation and done it properly, they may have discovered things that you know, would have generated a lot of controversy and, you know, would have produced lawsuits. But if you never look – because it's already conceded. I feel like that was a mistake.
So did you hear the story about voting machines? I think it was in a precinct in Greensboro just in the last day or so.
No.
Somebody figured out that people who were voting for the Democratic candidate was registering as a Republican candidate.
Oh, great.
There was something
amiss. Is this an electronic?
With the voting machine.
This is not a paper ballot. This is an electronic
voting machine. Like those dyeball machines, right?
Right.
So they caught it, and it, like 30 votes had been wrongly tabulated.
I mean, as far as I know.
Yeah, right.
It was only 30.
Stuff goes on. You know, it's going on all over the place.
Well, that's the thing with technology, right? I mean, even not attributing, you know, any mischief to it. It's these are still machines, and the electronic ones are especially tricky. Well, we're going to come back to that in just a moment. We're going to talk some more about voting, and we're going to just bend the ear here of Mark Markopoulos on this topic. As you can tell, he knows a lot about it. So we'll be right back. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. And we're back with Mark Markopoulos. We're talking about skunks, frankly. We're talking about the GOP and some of these hijinks, you know, over the years, and we could do a couple of shows, Mark. We could really fill the air with all the rotten things that the Republican Party has done in elections, and I don't think people really, even from a historical understanding, look back and correctly remember or understand about Watergate. And the 72 election that Nixon went after Ed Muskie because, you know, he did not want to run against Ed Muskie. He was worried that he would lose against Ed Muskie. And he did what was necessary, as they put it, to undermine his campaign and all of that. And so he dropped out of the race, and that gave us McGovern. And Nixon wanted to run against McGovern because he thought he could wipe him out, which he did. But you know, he did Richard Nixon did many, many terrible things. But he probably brought into the national political scene one Roger Stone, who is somehow still today this figure. What a creepy guy he is to me.
Yeah, and Roy Cohn. Yeah. One of his henchmen, too, who was Trump's mentor.
Oh, yeah.
So ruthless.
Ruthless is exactly the right word, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just absolutely nothing too scummy for these guys to do. Mm-hmm. And somehow this carries on and carries on. And you know, frankly, I'm right up through these guys, McConnell and Ryan. And I put them right in the same basket of deplorables.
And Phil Berger.
With those guys. Who's that? How do I not know this person?
He's the head of the Senate, North Carolina Senate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes.
I mean, the fact that they're planning on meeting right after the election with people who have lost their seats in the election— but still have a couple weeks to serve. They're going to call a special session.
Oh, I just can't imagine what they're going to do. Right. Something wonderful,
yeah,
I know.
They care deeply about the
they're probably going to plan
North Carolina,
a welcoming.
Right?
They're going to plan a welcoming party for all the Democrats coming in, right?
They're going to do some serious damage right away.
And then the Democrats will come in and will just say, undo.
Hopefully there's enough to do that. You know, if all we win is the House, then we won't really be able to undo it. We can stop further damage with overriding Cooper's veto. But it is a no-holds-barred situation. In many ways, it has been always, right?
Right. It's just that the lights are on now,
yeah,
I think.
Part of our problem is our history has never been taught. It's been taught in an antiseptic way. Right.
Right.
And so we haven't really appreciated all the dirty tricks and the corruption and who's really running the show.
Right.
We've been taught this, you know, sort of, Rebecca Sunnybrook Farm version of how our government works.
Yeah.
And now it's just a whole new level of intensity.
Politicians always want to put forward an optimistic image and want to talk about, how hardworking Americans are going to, you know, we're headed toward a better day and I'm going to lead you there and all of this stuff.
Yep.
And while that has value, right now what we're seeing on so many fronts, and you could never list them all, across many, many institutions, is kind of the bark being stripped off of what's really been going on. What does anybody have any doubt about what's driving Republicans to want to be the ruling party? I think they're about ruling. They're not about governing.
No, it's an oligarchy, you know, going on right now with minimal democracy at work.
Right.
And, you know, the silver lining of all this is that we can see it pretty clearly now.
Right.
You know, we have, you know.
I don't think you could 10 years ago. I don't think
it was
this clear at all.
I mean, this is clear to some people, but now it should be clear to everybody but the cult followers. Right.
Right.
There's about 30-35% of people who are just Trump cult followers.
Right.
And you can't really have a sensible discussion with them.
Right.
And so their formula is cult followers plus gerrymandering, plus voter suppression, equals victory.
Should keep them into authority, although they don't care that they have no moral authority. They have no consensus of direction from a policy standpoint about, and no representation even of where they want to take the country. It's almost like they have a pretty good idea of what they want to take away from you and me.
Right.
But not about what do they want to do with it except give it to their rich donors.
Exactly.
That's the whole
game, right? I mean,
it's just a transfer of wealth, and that's the end.
Koch Brothers, Heartland Institute, Americans for Prosperity, they play the long game, and they are in the end years of a possible very successful long-term coup, right?
Right.
And then you even have Duke Energy supports so many Republicans in this election while they pay lip service to climate change. That's just crazy, right?
Yeah.
You know, they'll say, well, they'll show pictures of their solar panels in the Sunday paper.
Right.
And not tell people that they're planning on only having like, I think it's 9% solar by 2030. And then they turn around
9%.
And talk about climate change on the, you know, and then support all these climate deniers.
Right.
You know, that's in a nutshell kind
yeah.
of the situation
well,
we're in.
Well, that's truly
up
talking
down,
out of both sides
you know,
of your mouth. Yeah.
So we got a mess to fix.
Yeah. And I hope we can get some of it fixed before, you know, Raleigh becomes a waterfront community mm-hmm. for the Atlantic Ocean because
– So we're going to get climate refugees. We already are getting climate refugees. I'm working with a customer who moved from Florida, came
yeah.
up here after one of the hurricanes down there, getting ready to build her little house.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard, you know, obviously people are coming here. It's a real nice place to live. It's up high. The water's good.
Yeah.
We got
for
you know,
now.
A relatively well-functioning local government.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of good things here that we just need to be cognizant of the fact that people are going to be coming here.
And, you know, and, in the elected officials in Florida, Rubio comes to mind, Jeb Bush comes to mind, certainly Rick Scott comes to mind.
Red Tide Rick.
Yeah, Red Tide Rick. You know, it's hard for me to wrap my head around how it is that the mayor of, is it, oh, I'm going to embarrass myself. The mayor of Tallahassee
yeah.
is apparently going to be, handily going to be the next governor. Running against a racist lunatic.
Right.
He's well ahead in that race, and yet somehow Rick Scott is in a statistical tie with Bill Nelson. I don't get that. I mean, that the red tide problem in Florida is just joined right at the hip with Rick Scott.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And
yeah.
and people across political lines, blame him for that. You know, Republicans blame him for that. Expect they need the government to fix that. And yet apparently they're giving serious consideration to giving him a promotion to the Senate. I don't get
yeah.
it.
Well,
I don't get it.
We'll see.
Is it because
yeah.
they know they're going to have a Democratic governor, and so they just think it's a balance thing, or? Maybe he can bring red tide to Washington or something, or I don't know. That's a real – I think the polls must be horribly wrong in that Senate race. I hope that's right. I hope it's right that it's wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting confused.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. So we're going to come back and talk for just a few minutes about one of our favorite subjects, you and me. Housing in teeny tiny houses and exciting news about teeny tiny houses. So we're going to be back with more with Mark Margopoulos in just a moment. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with Mark Fushi. With Mark Fushi. I'll be all right. We were just talking about Barbara Fushi with Mark Margopoulos. And I was saying how everybody's Barbara Fushi's cousin, which apparently now includes you. So that's funny. So we're talking about houses. Mark and I served together for a little while on the Orange County Housing Authority Board together. And we both have an affection for these tiny houses and feel like it's a really underutilized, terrific option for affordable housing and would like to see a lot more of that used in the county and have it available and have the county get behind building homes in small communities of tiny houses. And you were just telling me about this exciting project in Scotland County. Tell me all about it.
Yeah. So another Fushi, friend of mine, Herman Fushi, who grew up in Carrboro and lives here. He was friends with Bob Drakeford, who was a former mayor of Carrboro back in the early 80s. And we were talking, and he has a passion for tiny homes as well. And when he realized that I did too, he said, we got to go down and see Bob's business down in Scotland County, poorest county in the state, right? He has a tiny home RV park down there that he is making a good living off of and providing really good low rents in these tiny homes for folks while charging full price for the RV,
right?
People to stay there. It's not too far from from Pinehurst. So during the U.S. Open, he charges U.S. Open prices and makes a little bit
more. Oh, I'll bet. Yeah. But,
at any rate, so the idea is you have this anchor, this financial anchor of the RV owners who have some money, and they pay full price and a little bit more sometimes.
Right.
And that offsets the cost for the tiny home, small home renters in the park. So on the way back from that, we were just talking about, we got to do this in Orange County, right?
Yeah.
And there's no RV park close to Chapel Hill, UNC, people coming in for games, people coming to visit their kids, people coming
right.
because someone's in the hospital. It would be very, very lucrative. It'd be, I believe, filled up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, if we did it on the Green Tract right off of 40, right?
Yep.
Be a great location. And then we have the tiny home park in there as well.
Right.
For
a
homeless transitional, for just people who want an inexpensive place to live,
right.
and people who have a fancy little tiny home and want a place to park because that's because they're considered RVs.
Right.
And, you know, legally, right?
Right.
So there was a commemoration of Carborough Mayors last week. And so we knew that Bob Drakeford was going to be in town. So Herman and I called him up and said, hey, could you come a day early and meet some folks in the area that would be interested in this project? And we had that meeting, and our Orange County Housing Director, Cheryl Hampton, was there, and she learned a lot about it and feels like it's a viable opportunity to, you know, make some money for affordable housing in the end. And so we're in the process of we're going to take some tours. We're going to take some more folks from here down there.
Right.
So they can see it, let Bob explain it. We're going to go out to this tiny home park near Asheville
mm-hmm.
that's been successful and, you know, build a knowledge base with elected officials and other people in the community so that we can then start figuring
and
out
you know,
how to
if
do
you,
it.
If you have a chunk of land that will allow for it, then if you can, you could start something like that and start it on a scalable basis. So you could start it fairly small,
right? Yep.
And because the money generating piece of it is rental space to RVs. You know, you don't need to build a lot of infrastructure for that. You need some, but you don't need a ton of it. It's mainly just the space that's
right.
set up to suit for
yep.
that.
And Bob had the numbers, obviously, since he's been doing this for a while. So he shared the economics of it with us. I mean, that's the very first thing you need to do is put in the water and sewer connections
right.
and all that. But once that's in, right? And there's not all that
and
much more to
right,
do but just
it.
Run the business. He has a central laundry area.
Right. So just like you basically set up a lot of stuff like that, much as you would an apartment complex. You have shared laundry
right.
facilities. You might have a little playground area or more than one.
Yeah. I mean, you want stuff in there that binds the community together because
right.
people will be living there. I mean, some people will be living there in their RVs as well. Right.
right?
But you want to have some nice features that make people feel comfortable there.
Right. Right.
And, you know, I have no doubt in my mind that it will work.
My dad lives in a during the winter lives in a community that's very much like that in Florida. About half of the homes are modular, and about half of what that community is used for is RVs. And so they have a lot of tourists that come. People and they're right near, but not in Orlando. They're in Kissimmee, so they're sort of near enough to Orlando to be close by. And people come there over the winter, and they, you know, they come there in their RVs. They stay at this place for a couple of weeks, and they usually will tow a car along with them. Then they can go to Disney World for the day, or you know, even just
yeah.
just take a
yep.
shuttle over there. And they do a tremendous job with it, with keeping the balance between the people who are there as tourists, as vacationers, and the folks who live there permanently. And they have, you know, they have a restaurant, they have a large swimming pool, they have a bar and a pond with paddle boats and all this stuff, tennis courts and all of these things that the tourists kind of are attracted to, that they're like, hey, you know, we're here on vacation, so we want some of this stuff wherever we're staying. But then the permanent residents get the benefit from it too.
Right.
So
yeah.
it works very, very well. They've had a place
there
for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I mean, that's very exciting. I think that's a really workable thing that would not require a ton of investment either.
No.
To get it started and on its feet. So are you guys looking at land yet, or?
Well, like I said, the Green Tract is a very obvious place. It's owned, right. Co-owned by Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County. It was purchased back in the early 80s as the next landfill site.
Right.
And then by the time the landfill search ramped up in 92, there was quite a bit more development,
right.
expansion of,
right.
Chapel Hill, and everybody,
right.
said, you know, this land is way too valuable,
right.
to have a landfill right here, basically,
right.
in Chapel,
right.
Hill, and right next to the current one, actually, too. So there was that sort of sensitivity.
Right.
But anyway, so we've got this land that, you know, there's a natural area, there's land for a school site there, but there's, you know, 30 to 50 acres that we're looking at for possible,
right.
affordable housing,
right.
mixed use. And if we carve out, you know, 5 acres,
yeah.
of that for,
right.
a park like this,
and if you
we'll
set
still
it,
have
if you set it up
of,
well, you don't need that much space.
Yeah, we,
right.
maybe even less to start with, but we'll, so there, it's already land that is paid for and owned, right?
Right.
It seems logical. It's right off of 40.
Right.
It couldn't be a better location. It's not far from transit,
right.
for people who are living, right. in the small homes to be able to get.
Well, you know,
somewhere.
The really, really smart thing that these people did in Florida that created this place where my dad lives in the winter. They built this. They started this place in the 70s, and it started out very small. The smart thing that they did that they've continued to do through today is that the owners are still the owners. They own the land. So the people, even the people who are permanent residents there, they don't own the land that their home is sitting on. And their modular homes that are sitting there on that land that look like a very well-established neighborhood are technically mobile homes. And so according to Florida law, they're motor vehicles, so they don't pay real estate taxes, and
yep.
the owners of this closed community, they keep control over, you know, everybody's behavior, and if there are any problem residents, they can kick you right out of there because they own the land.
So that would be the status of a tiny home on wheels,
right.
that somebody might,
right.
be looking for a place to park and live for a while.
Yeah.
You know,
it would
be the same kind of status.
They could be going to graduate school and need a place,
sure.
to live. Sure.
Sure. Maybe they just want to come here for 4 or 5 months or whatever.
Try it out.
They're essentially,
right.
legally, they're just another RV, right?
Right.
And they could
exactly.
park there.
But they could register to vote, right?
I assume they can.
Well, you know what, Mark? You know what that means. You have to come back. You have to
I'll
come
do it.
Back to the
I'll
Weekend
do it.
Water Cooler. And we thank you for coming, for sharing all of this information, especially about elections. Everybody, if you haven't gotten out and voted, get out and vote. If you haven't registered yet, you can still register through Saturday, November 3rd. You know the locations. If not, they're on every website you can think of. And we thank Mark Margopoulos, as always, for being such fun at the Weekend Water Cooler. And
good to be
we'll
here.
Just close out by saying, go Red Sox. everybody, go on and have a great weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.